In recent years, there's been a huge quantity of material written about the Irish revolutionary period, focusing on the local level, events and personalities in individual counties, towns and parishes. We're looking now at a new book which uncovers the hidden history of the War of Independence in West Kerry. It's called War in the West, 1918 to 1923, The Struggle for Irish Independence on the Dingle Peninsula. The author is local historian Noel O'Murricu. Noel, you're very welcome indeed to the History Show.
Thank you, Miles.
Why did you decide to write this book and to focus on West Kerry in particular?
Well, obviously, I'll take the second part of your question first. I am a West Kerry man originally, and I would have an interest in local history for all my life, really. In 2018, I did a book, actually, about a granduncle of mine, Tomás Rochelle, who was killed by British forces in Carrigaholt in County Clare in March 1918. And it was in the course of researching that book that I discovered there was a wealth of material available through witness statements, brigade reports, etc. And the more I delved into it, the more I became convinced that this needed to be put down, because whether you might be aware of it, but whether you're aware of it or not, the general view of Kerry's contribution to the War of Independence is not great. The likes of Richard Mulcahy and Owen O'Duffy are on record as saying that they, in their opinion, Kerry did very little in the War of Independence, but what I was discovering was the opposite of that. So I decided to put pen to paper again and record the stuff I was finding out, and the result is this book.
Now, the book itself, it's long, it's 300 pages, and it only really covers two battalion areas of that part of Kerry. So obviously there's a wealth of material. We'll come to that in a few moments, but let's talk first of all about 1916, because Kerry was key to the plans for the Easter Rising. Why was that?
Kerry was indeed key to the plans for the Easter Rising. The decision to land 20,000 rifles in Bannerstrand on the Easter weekend in preparation for the Rising was not accidental. The original idea behind the Rising was to uprise in Dublin, fight there for maybe a week, and then fall back to the south and southwest and use the volunteers there to set up a line, a front, basically, to defend against the English. The failure of the arms to land and the subsequent failure of the Rising really put a halt to that. But it had an effect on Kerry especially. The commanding officer in Kerry at the time was Austin Stack, and his second in command was Paddy Cahill. Stack got arrested on Easter Saturday, which left Cahill in overall charge of the volunteers. There was about 600 volunteers massed in Tralee Easter Saturday night. But it seems Cahill did not know what the plans were for the Rising. It seems Stack did not inform him. And Cahill subsequently finished up being blamed by people. And I believe myself that it certainly coloured his view towards GHQ, and that had a very big bearing on matters in Kerry between 1918 and 1922. By 1919, when the War of Independence broke out, Cahill was in charge of the Kerry No. 1 Brigade. In early 1919, Richard Mulcahy, who was the Chief of Staff of the IRA, set in place a system whereby the brigades would report to him every month as to whatever actions they were carrying out. These actions, they're available in UCD, in the Mulcahy papers, under the Brigade Activity section. Now, I went through them, and there was actually no report there from Paddy Cahill on activities. Whether that was because of his distrust of GHQ or not, I have no way of saying. But it certainly gave Richard Mulcahy the impression that there was nothing happening in the No. 1 Brigade area in Kerry.
So the area that you're covering is the Kerry No. 1 Brigade, and there were three brigades in Kerry. Kerry No. 1 was North and West Kerry, and that was made up at different times of seven or eight battalions altogether. Now, as you mentioned, Paddy Cahill took charge of this brigade during the War of Independence. You describe in the book how Cahill was disliked intensely by many, but that the men in his circle were fiercely loyal to him. Indeed, several times, as you point out, his right-hand man, Tighe Brosnan, turned down offers from senior IRA figures to take over as commandant. Why do you think it was that GHQ was out to get Cahill? Did they genuinely believe that he was not doing very much, that he just wasn't up to the job?
They did, in fairness, I believe. Like the reason I told you about the fact that he wasn't sending in reports probably led to Mulcahy believing that there was nothing happening there. but there was other reasons as well. For example, there was a priest in Tralee, a Father Beaton, who was a rabid Republican. This priest actually wanted to go out on missions with the volunteers armed and take an active part in ambushes. And he considered that Cahill wasn't doing enough as brigade commander. And he composed a letter of complaint and sent it to Mulcahy. He got it signed by 4 or 5 senior IRA people in Tralee. Mulcahy, when he read this letter, actually did the opposite of what Father Bean expected and sent down an execution order that the 5 who signed the letter would be executed. When this order got to Tralee, as you can imagine, there was mayhem. And it took taking indeed the intelligence officer for the Harry No. 1 Brigade, went straight to Dublin again and went to Collins first to try and get this order rescinded. Collins sent him to Cathal Brú to try and get the order rescinded, and Cathal Brú sent him to Mulcahy to get the order rescinded. And eventually, Mulcahy decided to rescind the order. But Mulcahy still took it upon himself to write to Cathal, outlining the complaints against him. And a lot of the feeling would be that this left Mulcahy in the situation where he felt he had no choice but to resign. And there was a third reason as well, possibly the Lisburn ambush, which took place in 22nd of March 1921, resulted in the death of 3 volunteers. The Tans actually turned the tables on the volunteers. Now, one of them died accidentally before the ambush, and the other 2 were killed in the course of the ambush. For that failed ambush, Cahill got the blame as well. And the fact that he didn't submit a report outlining exactly what happened in the course of the ambush did nothing to dissuade Mulcahy from believing that he was at fault. All these reasons combined led to Cahill feeling he had no option but to resign in around May 1921. His resignation ultimately led to the disbandment of the Flying Column, which had only been organised at this stage for about 3 months and which had taken part in about 6 major ambushes. They were disbanded and sent back to their districts. The hut they were in, or in Kiel, and up on the side of a mountain in Kiel, was dismantled, and the War of Independence for the Flying Column of the No. 1 Brigade in West Kerry actually finished 5 or 6 weeks before the truce.
Now, you mentioned somebody there, Tighe Kennedy, and he comes into the book quite a lot. Who was Tighe Kennedy? Why was he so important?
Tighe Kennedy was born in Enniscorthy in 1885. He was an accountant with Kerry County Council, and he was also the intelligence officer for Kerry No. 1 Brigade. Ernie O'Malley, in his book, describes Tighe Kennedy as probably one of the best intelligence officers in Ireland, and that's no surprise. For example, the key to the decipher for the codes that the RIC used in their telegrams, Tighe Kennedy provided the key to break those codes to Collins at the start of the war, and he kept providing them every month all through the course of the war, and every time they were changed, he provided them. In his intelligence network, he had 2 county inspectors, a district inspector, 2 special crime sergeants, and numerous other sergeants, as well as a Captain O'Malley from the Royal Munster Fusiliers, who were based in Tralee, and a wireless operator from the Army Barracks in Ballymullen in Tralee. His intelligence network was run along the railway line, basically, but his value to Collins, I think, has never been fully recognised. His value to Collins was such that when Collins was actually going over to negotiate the treaty in 1921, he asked Tighe Kennedy to accompany him. Due to the situation in Kerry, which we just described, Tighe actually refused. He was afraid Kerry was on the verge of civil war and so on. And that's the reason he didn't accompany Collins over to London.
But Collins did use him during the treaty negotiations at a crucial point during those negotiations, didn't he?
He did, without a doubt, and it happened in November 1921. Collins was home for probably to debrief the Dáil as to what was happening in London, and probably giving an indication as well of how serious they viewed the situation. There was a meeting arranged while Collins was home that weekend to try and resolve the situation with Kerry No. 1 Brigade. Present at that meeting was Collins, De Valera, Cathal Brú, Richard Mulcahy, Andy Cooney, Tighe Kennedy and Tighe Brosnan, and 1 or 2 more. They didn't resolve the situation, but Kennedy describes in his witness statement how himself and Tighe Brosnan and Collins went for lunch on the Saturday, and Collins tasked him with a job at going over to Portsmouth, which was the headquarters of the British Navy at the time. Collins had a contact inside in the Navy. He was a man by the name of Russell from Ballydavid originally, believe it or not. And he was a member of the IRB. And the task, Collins said, Kennedy, was to discover whether Lloyd George was bluffing or not when he stated that he was in a position to blockade Ireland if Collins didn't sign the treaty. Russell did indeed confirm to Kennedy that the British were recommissioning ships that had been decommissioned after the First World War. So he was making preparations for a blockade of Ireland, and that probably played a big part as to why Collins actually signed the treaty. He knew Lloyd George was not bluffing.
Tell us then about Cumann na mBan in Kerry. How big a role did Cumann na mBan play during this period?
Well, my own belief is that the War of Independence countrywide could not have been the success it was without Cumann na mBan. And this would be as true of West Kerry as the rest of Ireland. The first organiser in West Kerry was Bridget Coakley Kennedy from Castle Gregory, who organised Cumann na mBan branch there in 1914. After 1916, it waned a bit, but she was centrally involved again when it started reforming in 1917, 1918. And in those few years, she organised branches in Lisbon, in Alcoshley, in the Maharees, in Castle Gregory, Camp, Ballyduff, Clahan, and Dingle. The main duties of Cumann na mBan, as per the rest of the country in a lot of ways, they acted as spotters, as couriers and messengers. They were hiding and transporting and maintaining arms. They were providing safe houses, food and clothing, and they were nursing and comforting the wounded and assisting in Sinn Féin courts and raising funds and actually making ammunition as well. There was a few women now from, say, West Kerry that would deserve mention. Katie McCarthy, for instance, from Castle Gregory, describes at one stage, probably in early 1921, rushing out the back door of their house in the village and hiding rifles in seaweed outside while the tants were knocking on the front door to come in. And they got away with that. Then you have, like, say, Una Moriarty from Inch describes receiving bullets hidden in crocks of jam sent from her sister in London. And she actually went to London at one stage and smuggled home a trunk full of arms. Siobhan Cleary from Ballymore, near Dingle, was a member of Cumann na mBan in Cork, and she went anti-treaty. She was arrested and interned in Mount Jai, and she went on hunger strike there. And her health suffered badly as a result, and she actually died in 1924, at the young age of 25, the coroner and her inquest attributed her death to the ill health she suffered as a result of her incarnation and subsequent hunger strike. And now there's 14 names, and the Republican Memorial cited in the Mall in Dingle, they're all men, and I personally believe that her name should be amongst those names.
Now, Noel, when it comes to the Civil War, Kerry leaps to mind for the sheer level of brutality in the county during the Civil War. But would it be fair to say that, based on his impression of what was going on in Kerry during the War of Independence, that Richard Mulcahy wasn't expecting much opposition to the Free State forces there?
Probably not. The atrocities in Kerry, the worst of them happened in 1923, when the Free State Army landed in Kerry in August 1922. They had a fair bit of success. There was actually an attempt made in November 1922 to call a halt to the civil war in Kerry. Ty Kennedy, at this stage, was in jail. Now, Ty Kennedy remained neutral in the civil war, but he was still jailed because they were afraid of him. But while he was in jail, he was approached by the spy in the castle, Dave Nelligan, with a view to approaching Paddy Cahill and trying to negotiate a ceasefire in Kerry. Ty got his contacts to contact Cahill, and Cahill agreed to come in and open talks on the promise that he was guaranteed safe passage. The meeting duly took place, but that night the Free State Army raided Paddy Cahill's home in Tralee. Now, Paddy Cahill wasn't staying there, but obviously, as far as he was concerned, his free passage guarantee had been violated and he left. There was no more talks. So I often wonder whether or not, if those talks had continued, would we have been spared the horrors of the worst atrocities in Kerry in 1923.
And they were pretty atrocious, as you know, and I'm sure as many of our listeners know. Noel, the book is a wonderful book. It's a hefty one, 300 pages long, beautifully illustrated with photographs and pull-out maps. A very, very impressive production indeed. Congratulations on that. And it's called War in the West, 1918 to 1923, The Struggle for Irish Independence on the Dingle Peninsula. It's available from Mountain Range Press. Their website is mountainrangepress.com. And the author is Noel O'Murrahcu. Noel, thank you very much for joining us on the History Show this evening.
Thank you, Miles.